Hello! This is an episode of Ray's Musical Reviews, doing another edition of KP Favorites, as of, we did this a little while ago, but, if you don't know who KP is, this is KP.
Go Home Eat Production.
The sultry voice of KP.
That was Jared.
That's Jared.
Yeah, that's you.
You'd be Ray.
I am, of course, Ray, part of Ray's Musical Reviews. Today, this is one of KP's favorites, Living Color.
Greatest moment of my life.
Listening to this album or right now?
Second greatest moment of my life. I'm an in-the-moment kind of guy.
That's fair.
But this record coming out was crazy to me.
1988.
1988 or 89?
Oh, by the way, the album is Living Colors, Vivid.
Yeah, I know. I said that.
This is like high school and first year of college for me. Oh, and like, dude. Like you gotta remember, like rap is kind of new to the scene, like a little bit at the middle school thing, like Sugar Hill Gang. And then like Beastie Boys and all that happens about sophomore year. And I'm like into that, and I'm into a little bit of everything, but I'm into that. I'm into Prince. So, I'm into metal and stuff. And this comes out this and it's like, holy cow, you can really put all that together.
Right, we are giving,
man.
Right now, we are giving Dad the floor.
Oh, you want me to just kind of talk about how the band starts first?
Yeah, roll through it.
Okay. Starts out, Vernon Reid is a well-thought-of New York jazz playing. He sits in with New York jazz guitarists. He's also, as we would later find out, one of the great guitarists in the whole world. All of these guys, Muzz Killings, the bass player, winds up leaving eventually, but he is a virtuoso of a player. The drummer, Will Calhoun, I actually called my cousin, who is happens to be a well-renowned drummer as well, and I asked him about Will, and he was like, dude, his reach goes so far over his genre. And I said, it's kind of interesting because he actually does workshops. If he goes to your town, Living Colors playing, they'll do a workshop beforehand where drummers can come and learn stuff. You know, he's graduate of Cal Berkeley, I believe. And then you have Vernon is looking to form a band. It is called, from 84 to 86, Vernon Reid's Living Color. They haven't got a lot of traction there. He goes to a birthday party in which they're supposed to sing happy birthday to a woman there. She stops them and says, I just want Corey to sing it to me. That would be Corey Glover. He hears Corey Glover sing happy birthday and walks over and asks him if he is in a band. Corey says, well, I do a little bit of this, that, the other. I'm in acting, trying to do things. He had done an Army commercial where it was like the on repeat on your TV when I was a kid. It's like, if you're old enough, you'll remember the thing where it's, what are you going to do? Eat your way to college. They're sitting in a diner. Like, if you remember that quote, then you remember Corey was in that commercial. He winds up, over the course of this, he winds up being in the movie Platoon over the course of the writing of this record. And then you wind up with them getting on the club scene after they're formed together. They have the songs formed a little bit. They're playing CBGBs in a little-known musician named Mick Jagger is watching. And he sees them, likes them, champions them, to the point in which he actually produces two songs on this record and plays backup harmonica on one song and backup vocals on Glamour Boys.
Yes.
You know, so he, by championing them, he got his fingers in there because he thought this could be something, you know. And then, of course, we get this incredible album that fuses metal and punk and funk,
the gospel,
rap. Chuck D is on this record with Flava Flav.
Very, very briefly.
But they dive into social issues on this record in a way that was, how do I put it,
not common
for the time, especially. You know, it had gotten to where a lot of what was going on was either tongue in cheek or
very frank.
Oh, he blatantly tells you throughout the record what is going on. There's no, I wonder what he really means about this. You know, and it's an amazing I don't know. What did you guys think about the record?
Should we get into the...
Let's get into it.
How did you feel about the opener, Cult of Personality?
it's Cult of Personality.
Honestly, that's how I feel. I don't know how this is going to sound to Dad, but this was my favorite song off of it. Just because it's so...
Woof. Like, it's really, really good. And we're all wrestling fans here.
Yeah, so you get into it through CM Punk, in a way. Who's a pro wrestler, if you don't know.
Yeah, he came out and to
because,
this
and especially because, like, I started watching wrestling around the time Punk was big, this song does hit a huge connection with me.
Yeah.
Because, like, when I hear that song, I can just hear faintly in my head, it's Clobberin' Time, just kind of ringing out a little.
Right.
And it's all just kind of surreal.
Well, and one thing that's weird, and obviously we're not going to focus on that too much, but what better way to watch the Cult of Personality than to watch how a Steve Austin ascends to the top, or a Rocky Maivia, and how in a thing where nothing is real, everything is possible, but nothing is real, right? In a thing where everything is possible, nothing is real, it's the personality and the charisma that champions you to the forefront of this industry. Punk being the voice of the voices. But now move on into the song.
Everything's a work, brother. That's what you're trying to say.
Life's a work. And the one of the common threads going through this record is style over substance. That's the point, right? Is that, and Corey talks about, Vernon talks about in this particular record, he says, you know, they were going to use Hitler, but they thought that would turn people off so much that they couldn't. And, you know, Mussolini's the kind of name where you might not, a lot of people don't even get who Mussolini was, right? And Gandhi's the name. And he said, the point is, these people that have galvanized huge groups of people, they have certain things in common, whether the message is bad or good or whatever. And there's a charisma there. He said, he follows that up with, he said, you take Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X. He said, they were great orators. Absolutely. They also happen to look like matinee idols. It doesn't hurt, right? And if you can galvanize a group of people who feel like they don't have a voice, and that is what your evil leaders do, and that is what the other people that you agree with do. They turn away, they are able to get people who feel like they can't get ahead because the system is against them, and through their charisma and their ability to make people go, yeah, that's right, it's not fair for me, it turns into, and it's all Teflon. Because it's one person. Because the, how to put it, the masses make the master. You know what I mean? It's not the other way around. You have to have people. You're just a voice screaming in the wilderness by yourself. You have to figure out a way to connect with people that makes them sponsor you and drive you forward. And that's the whole point of this record.
Oh yeah.
And Corey is, I mean, all due respect to Pavarotti, but that dude's the singer. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he is crazy. And Vernon's the best guitarist, like, you know, whatever. And then the way they just march this message forward in your face, the way they, it starts with the first line where you have the Malcolm X, I want to say this in a way that everybody on earth can understand. And then the guitar is so heavy at the beginning, you know everybody's not going to understand this. And that was the point of the first few seconds, right? And then the only thing you have to fear is fear itself at the end, the whole journey. And in 4.5 minutes, which is probably less than I just talked, they say so much more than you can say in a novel.
Yeah.
I think it also, especially during late 80s, the lack of faith in government, like, to me, it kind of it rings with the same truth as with the Talking Heads' Remain in Light.
Interesting that they have a Talking Heads cover on here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
It's a really good one, too.
Absolutely.
But to your point, the 80s began, and I'm not going to blame anybody here. I could if this was a political plot. But the 80s began a separation of haves and have-nots, which we have not. Every now and then it gets stagnated a little bit, but we haven't really conquered yet. And that's what they're pointing at. Throughout the thing, we talk about how we'll get there, but Glamour Boys is, you know, those guys live on credit, right? Other people aren't allowed to. Open Letter to the Landlord. You're pushing people out of the community in order. Dude, that song.
This album just comes from just such a place of, like, lived truth and lived reality. It's not from a place that's ever performative or metaphorical. It's just, this is what's going on.
Right.
This when he looks out the window of his apartment and he looks around, this is what he sees.
Right.
This was a POV album for what life was like.
For him and his friend and the people he came with, yes, in the New York area.
Yes, okay, absolutely.
This is what we're dealing with.
They look up at their leaders and they see people who lie, who say they want to help them, but just don't.
Yeah, we get into that further and further as we go through that album. Go ahead.
Should we ask the next question?
Sure.
Favorite and least favorite song. My favorite, I said my favorite was Cult of Personality. My least favorite, maybe like one of the last two tracks. And now we go into how do you feel about the closer, Which Way to America. How did you feel about it?
Dude,
really, really good.
It is.
Yeah, so the last song, Which Way to America, I think it's a mirror put up to the way that a lot of people think about America, and especially during this time, which was very divisive, which ended up being have-nots. There was a very real line.
The best of times and the worst of times.
Yes. Depends on perspective. Mm-hmm. Well, when you go to the TV and say that America's doing great, well,
that's not... I look outside my window.
Yeah. He looks, but the way he looks around at the world, he does not see this, you know, quote, truth that is being on TV.
Right.
That is coming from the leaders.
Right.
Harkening back to the first song, where it's like his America is vastly different from somebody else's America.
Mm-hmm.
And the gulf is only getting wider.
Right.
I think it's phenomenal. And I do agree, the guitar work all across this album is absolute fire.
Oh my God.
Like, the music rules.
Yeah, it's great. Dude, all the guitarists, especially out of this era.
Oh my gosh. It sounds crazy. I do love the lyrics, "Where's my picket fence, my long tall glass of lemonade," harkening back to the stereotypical like 50s, 60s American dream.
Right, and then later he talks about VCRs and things that a person that had some money would have.
Yeah.
Right? I feel like you can't talk about... I don't think you can talk about the last song without kind of talking about Glamour Boys in the lead into it. Because
yeah.
I think it all kind of runs... I believe it all kind of runs together because Glamour Boys is these guys that live off credit. And when you're talking about two Americas... The party kid that is going to be able to fail and fail up is a different America than what Corey's dealing with. And that's who he's talking about. You know, the Glamour Boys are always on the guest. They don't even have to spend money that's theirs in order to, you know, they know people. So they eat, they party, they drink, they do drugs, all for free, except for a credit card. You know what I mean? And it's just, and we may get into Glamour Boys later, but that message pulls you down into What's Your Favorite Color, which again I feel like is, first of all, What's Your Favorite Color for a minute, yes, 40,
dude, banger.
Jesus,
banger.
You know, you have the song itself. First of all, you have Caribbean rhythms and then crunch and Glamour Boys, and then you get into What's Your Favorite Color, and it's a straight James Brown style of thing with a metal band playing it. Even the click 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 of the guitar is a little bit James Brown, right? And the bass is great and all that, but it's driving you into, you know, we judge things in colors, right? We just do. And I'm not talking about race colors, I'm talking about in general. You know, money's green, you know, what's your favorite Skittle, purple, well, okay, well, no, your favorite, that's grape, right? Everything you do, you wind up reducing it to a color somehow. You know, you hell is red.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When you're in trouble financially, you're in the red. When you're, you see where I'm coming from?
Absolutely. Again, it's just like the division that is being revealed along this album.
Through the whole thing. And then, but those lead you into Which Way to Your America, which is exactly what you're talking about, right? And it's almost like a tiny rock opera right there where they're talking about, it really is, I got a great friend, Will Kennedy, he always says, the market is not America. You know what I mean? It just isn't.
Yeah.
And it never has been. And they're so good at enforcing all this, but then you wrap the music around it, You don't even need lyrics. Okay.
Dude.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Okay. I can go. Yes, sir.
Actually, I want to go into a little bit into the theme of drugs on this album. Because the way that it talks about people using drugs is way more... what's the term? Just like... I'm not going to say positive, but way more empathetic.
Right.
Like, you hear a lot of people, especially when you listen to a lot of like rock from this era, you hear a lot about people just doing drugs and partying and rocking and how that's bad.
Right.
This has more of an empathetic vibe where it's talking about why.
Right.
People not
they're doing it to get away from what they're in.
Yeah.
It's an escape.
Yes. That's like one of the tiny issues I have with this album is I think maybe a different track list. I would have put Open Letter to a Landlord earlier in the album and have that lead into like Desperate People, Memories Can't Wait, Glamour Boys. That's where I would have put it.
Right.
Okay. Just because for me, Open Letter to a Landlord is so integral to the devaluing of where you live, the devaluing of your memories and your lifestyle, the dehumanization you feel through gentrification and destruction of where you lived is massively important to how you cope with the world.
Dude, can I piggyback on that?
Absolutely.
I was going to say just a little something.
Yes.
Please.
Okay. You don't know how nervous I am because I'm about to criticize this album and you people are just bathing it in kisses. I am incredibly nervous.
Go ahead.
Right. Which Way to America? The reason why this might be my least favorite is because, like, okay, audibly, and I like the song's lyrics and I like everything about that, but this album is so much, it can tend to be a little too much to the point where, like, This Way to America is supposed to be the big maximalist explosion when the rest of this album is also the big maximalist explosion.
It's exploding every 50 seconds.
Yeah, you're right.
And like, that's fair. I can't really tell if Which Way to America is the climax or it's just like, it's everything else. This album never really takes a breather. Like, Open Letter to a Landlord is the closest it takes to a breather, but even that, it's pretty fast paced for a ballad.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like sometimes they just gotta sit down and take a chill pill. You know, just kind of gotta.
I absolutely see that.
So I can, like, at least stomach, you know?
I agree with that to an extent where it'll be. When I was listening to it, it was like a lot. I had to take some breaks. Like, I had to pause it for a couple minutes.
Well, you know what you just hit on the head is all my life, I have wondered why these guys aren't the Rolling Stones. Because I look and I go, those guys are literally the best at their jobs in the world. Like, you can't put, I don't care what you're talking about, whether it's the Chicago Bulls or Michael Jordan, you don't put a team together that is more talented than that team is. It's like having four princes in a band. And yet, they're not the biggest band in America. And the reason why is there isn't, like you're saying, it really is the next album that give you Information Overload. And it really is Information Overload in that you have so many changes in rhythms and beats and tenures and
this,
go ahead.
This might sound blasphemous to you, but to me, their fall was kind of similar to like Oasis's fall, where like Time's Up, like they just got bigger and louder, and it's just like you are already big and loud. You know, there's already, you're just putting more in. It's like I need to, like, it's kind of overbearing at points.
Your stuff's gonna be in a yard. I mean, it's cool, but your stuff's gonna be New York.
Yeah,
but like you said too, though, when you wonder at the end of this record, was that the grand finale? It turns out it wasn't, because they give you an album that is this, but more of it next. You know what I mean? It's like the Avengers and Avengers 2. The point is, not everybody's palate can do that. Like, I can absorb it, and I just give me more. Not everybody can
do that.
Well,
I think it kind of needs, like, okay, I'm going to, like, I think I need to, like, harken back to an album, but I don't. Let's go back to a couple minutes. I'll just say My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy.
Okay.
While it did have its maximalist songs, it also had its songs that were a bit of a cool down, like Gorgeous, Blame Game, So Appalled. So the maximalist moments stuck out more. Because this album is just so much at once, the maximalist parts don't really stick out as much as I would like them to.
Right. But also you have, let's say you have like the AC/DCs, the Metallicas, the guys like that, that manage to drive the nail throughout their record, but they're also not giving you continuous social commentary while you're doing it. It's not always, you literally, when you listen to Living Color, you are self-evaluating. You are also macro-evaluating the society in which you live. It's a lot to take them in and do it. But going back to you talking about open letter to the landlord, you want, like, we don't talk a whole lot about live experiences on here, and I do want to tell a story about seeing them live at the end of this. But just for, I usually, when I get there, their shows, usually what happens is there's like seven guys that play guitar, and they just run and they stand in front of Vernon Reid and they just stare at his rig and they tell you how great he is. Well, I go stand just to the right of them because that puts me between Corey and Vernon. I always get to them early whenever they're around. And standing between Corey and Vernon, when he's singing Open Letter to the Landlord, just covers your body in goosebumps. It is, because he's such a singer, you know.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
How do you feel about Corey's vocals?
Great.
Yeah. I did like have like the little nitpick that sometimes he tends to oversing some parts, where it's just like, all right, now you're just gloating.
You know what I like? You know what I like about your criticisms?
What?
You're basically saying my criticism of them is that they're just too good.
That's absolutely not what I'm saying. That's absolutely
That's all I'm hearing.
Like,
it's just better than great, and I can't handle better than great.
I realize that all of my criticisms are falling on deaf ears.
I completely understand. Everything's not for everybody's palate. It just so happens one thing happens to hit my buttons right. That's not supposed to hit your buttons.
Right. I do think that structurally this could have flowed a bit better. I absolutely agree with
and
that.
And I think sometimes Corey is just like, all right. Like, it's like when people, like, go a little over to sing the national anthem.
Oh, dude. Every single person. That kills me about hearing the national anthem. Just sing it.
It's like,
all you gotta do is sing it. You don't need to, like, really go for it every time you sing the national anthem, bro. Just go like, there and
correct,
sing.
But the content on here to Corey is something he should be emphasizing. And just because he's capable of doing that on a level higher than most doesn't mean he shouldn't.
Didn't he used to be a gospel singer?
Yeah, he
actually has been on he's been in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Was he really?
Yeah.
That, I mean, rules.
Like as a post Living Color when they were on break. You know what I mean? I've seen him. I saw him front Galactic, which is a really good jam band out of the New Orleans area, and it was as good a show as Galactic is a cool band in that they'll get guest singers for tours, and they rolled through Pensacola, and as a matter of fact, my cousin Brandon, we were talking about being at that show the other night, and it was as great as anything you could. Could you imagine? I'll tell you nuts about the vocals you're talking about. I'm standing up across the street before one of the shows, and it's in a bar, of course, and I say to the guy, I said, he's a guitarist, I said, you need to come across the street. I said, Living Color's playing 20 minutes. He's like, I'm right here. I'm like, bro, you think you're a guitarist? He said, yeah, I'm a guitarist. I said, okay, the greatest guitarist in the world is across the street for $15. That's 12 steps, dude, for $15. Come on. We get there, three songs later, he's shaking me, and he yells at me, it's like a metal band with a gospel singer. And I just started laughing. I was like, yeah, dude, you're having a good time.
I thought he said something like, but like a really good metal band.
Yeah. But it's even more though, because it's not a metal band at all. There's so many different, like you said, the bass lines go up and down from Caribbean, and it drives, and the drums drive, and then the guitar drives and all of that. What's the next question?
The next question is, I think we've just ticked all the boxes, really.
Say our favorite songs?
Yeah, I said Cult of Personality and Open to a Landlord, I think. Open Letter to a Landlord, sorry. I just say Open to a Landlord.
Yeah.
Jared, what did you say?
I think, Cult of Personality is one of mine, yes. But I would also want to give a shout out to the song Broken Hearts, because I think that has the best songwriting on the whole record. Just the visual imagery presented in that song, the fragments of the dreams I used to have and bits of aspiration lying in the sand, the stained glass wall of love that I cannot see through. dude. The visual imagery, just the idea that his dreams are broken and that there's this supposed light of love that he can't reach.
Right.
Okay. Dude, provides the only light here in my lonely room. Dude. All
right, Dad. Come on. All right, so should we rate it out of 10 now?
I don't get to say my favorite song.
What's your favorite song?
What's your favorite song?
Wow. Can I get some shout-outs?
I thought you already said it.
No. First of all, it's funny, like I was driving home trying to listen to it one last time before we did this last night. And I've heard Glamour Boys, I literally go to and listen to all the time. And so it's on. I'm going to fast forward over it. And I couldn't. I just drove slower home.
Yeah.
I love that track. Open Letter is beautiful. I dude, how great. First of all, Open Letter to the Landlord. An American poet helped write the lyrics. Tracy Morris. She's from Brooklyn. That's kind of a neat little sidebar there. Funny Vibe is so overwhelming in its content. But
again, you see through his perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't understand.
White people always try to say.
You can't understand the guy walking across the street because they don't want to be near you, or the woman walking across the street or grabbing her purse when you get in the elevator. He gets that on a level that you can't read about that or hear about that and have it not.
I love the line, you. I'm going to try not to hate you.
Right.
Because man, it's so easy, because like you're gonna treat me like I'm subhuman animal.
Right.
How can I not hate you?
Right.
Yeah.
But my favorite song on there is probably Desperate People.
Dude, Desperate People.
Yeah. It is so ferocious, and then when they get to the bridge, and Corey's talking about the earth revolving and all that, he literally runs a scale. Each line goes up, up, up to a howl, and it's like, oh my God, how does all of that come out of a person? You know what I'm saying?
Yes. So we rate it out of 10. All right, you're giving it a 10.
I gave it a 73.
Out of 100?
Yeah.
A 10?
Yeah.
oops.
Strong 8 to a 9, somewhere in there for me.
Okay. This is tough because like, the Blank's Favorites series might be flawed because we all naturally are less harsh on it. I'll give it like a 7.5 to an 8.
So what he's saying is that it's a 3.
No.
Because he's being nice to me.
No.
I'm saying just naturally, like, if someone's saying, oh, it's my favorite, like, I don't want to hurt their feelings when I criticize it.
Well, you can rate it where you want to rate it.
I'll rate it like a 7.5 to an 8, strong 7.5.
Would you rate it a 6 if I wasn't sitting here?
No.
Would you rate it a 6.2?
No.
6.3.
I'd still probably rate it a 7.5.
Okay, well that's good. Fair. Can I tell a concert story?
Yeah, go sure. For it.
So I go to see them in, this isn't that long ago, when the Shade album came out. They played a bar, Panama City or Fort Walton one. I apologize for not remembering exactly where it was. It's in Club LA is the name of it. We're there. It's not a packed house by any means. They play the show, and like you said, it's when you go to see them, it is a attack on your senses. There's these driving drums and the beats go on and off, and then you have this great guitarist and you have this fantastic singer, and I'm standing between them and I'm right on the rail, and they get to the second to last song, something like that, and somebody opened the back door. Behind the stage, in a pit bull, as big as his torso was bigger than my thigh, his head may have been bigger than my thigh, runs onto the stage, right? These four poor guys out of Brooklyn are standing there, and you know how it is when a pit bull gets. I mean, we're in Northwest Florida. There's a lot of them running around, and they're not awful. They're not what people think they are. But when one's free on the street and you see them, you do know. Things go wrong here, I got a problem. Now, understand, this pit bull...
I realize every time we go out walking, there's like this dude who owns a pit bull, and he...
Yeah.
I don't know if he has it on a leash. No, it's like behind a gate or something.
Well, they're...
And every time you say, oh, look at the guy, he could kill us.
Right,
oh.
And they're, the neck is bigger than the head. Okay, so this thing comes running out onto the stage. It's running behind him a little bit, and then it comes between Corey and Vernon, so it's running straight at me, and then it realizes, like, there's no... Like, the stage is about to end.
Yeah.
Well, he tries to put on the brakes. He can't because he's got fingernails.
Yeah.
And so, the stage is wood. So he's got fingernails. So he starts sliding towards me, bumps into Vernon's speaker to keep him on the stage. my eyes lock eyes with Vernon. His eyes are huge, and he doesn't stop playing. The whole band doesn't stop playing. I look up at Corey, and Corey is singing, and like, oh my God, you know? And then this mountain man comes through from the back, and I assume it's his dog. He walks between him. He looks, I mean, like I said, it's all a blur the way it happens. He looks like he's 6'8", because he's on a stage. He grabs a dog. It covers half his body, and he's yanking him off, and the dog is stuck all fours out. Like, I was like, oh, my God. It gets him off the stage, and Corey looks at Vernon, and he goes, that happened.
What other reaction can you have?
Holy cow. How surreal is that? This yes. Surreal, dude. It, like I said, it was this weird, incredible overload of senses that you wanted. And then
it's like a dog.
Then there's a pit bull running straight at me with like Vernon Reed's guitar playing the soundtrack of him taking my throat out.
Yes.
You know, which I wasn't thinking like that time. I was just like, what's going on?
Next, we are doing a personal favorite of mine. Arctic Monkeys, whatever people say I am, that is what I am not.
Negative one.
You saying you're marking it worse?
It's going to be a negative one for me.
Oh, are yeah. you just doing this out of spite?
I want to go back and change my vote on Pinkerton.
You didn't even vote on Pinkerton.
It's too good.
It's too good so for me. Good. I'm giving it a 2.
I like that you took all of my well-thought-out criticisms and boiled them, and through your own delusion, boiled them down to, it's too good.
That is what I've told myself about Living Color my whole life. This is too good for the masses to consume. It's not my fault. Everybody else sucks.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. That's why you're a Seth Rollins fan, too.
Right. They don't get it.
They don't get it.
I get it. I'm not a Seth Rollins fan either. I'm a Colby Lopez fan.
Yeah.
He's not exactly. Very much of a Seth Rollins guy, you know? You're not very much of a Living Color guy, you know?
I don't know.
That's what you say all the time.
I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, we were talking about...
Arctic Monkeys, whatever people say I am, that's why I'm not. The fastest selling debut album in the UK.
Dang, that's impressive considering its competition.
Definitely Maybe was its competition.
Yeah.
And also, the album cover is really great too because it's a dude smoking a cigarette. But around the time that it was released, there was about to be a law passed where cigarettes were about to be deemed like illegal. There was like a... And so it's really like...
I feel like the Britpunk scene would have faded away immediately.
There is no Britpunk. There is no Britpunk scene. I made up that genre in my head. I just said it's garage Britpunk because, like, I just kind of made it up.
British punk exists 100%.
Yes.
It's like all post-punk now, but it still exists.
Can I change my vote on Definitely Maybe?
Yeah.
Like, 4. Give,
4.
Give
like wolf. 4. Wolf.
It's too good.
It's too good.
Wonder what?
What have we been listening to this week?
What have I been listening to?
I can't respond to that.
Definitely Maybe isn't the one with Wonder Woman.
Like Wonder Whale.
What did we listen to this week?
I listened to a lot of stuff I have in my like collection. Queen, The News of the World. Arguably the most iconic opener ever.
Oh, is that okay? See, what I haven't actually listened to that album.
Dude, what a great scene in the movie.
Which movie?
In the Queen movie.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
There's a movie?
You've never heard of that?
No, I don't. Actually, weirdly enough, I don't know all that much about Queen.
Dude, we gotta sit down. We should do a movie review on that. The guy who played Freddie Mercury got.
Oh, are you? Yeah.
The guy who played Freddie Mercury people, got said, Best Actor.
When you said Queen movie, I thought you meant a movie that was made by Queen.
Not
a movie about Queen starring Randy Malik, which I do know about and have not seen.
So okay, well, you got to see people, the scene in that movie is crazy.
The thing in that, it's We Will Rock You, immediately followed by We Are the Champions, which is...
1-2 punch.
Incredible?
Well, and the beautiful...
Dude, and I completely forgot about the guitar solo in We Will Rock You, too.
Dude, yes.
It's like, it scared my cat. Like, because like the feedback of the guitar is going into the thing. It's incredible. And I actually forgot how just experimental Queen were, because there are a lot of like strange technical interludes in there. And there's one, I think it's one of the songs where it's like Freddie's vocals constantly like layered over each other.
Oh.
And it's like it picks its, it's almost like it like picks its moments, and so like its maximalist moments stand out. Also, My Melancholy Blues is gorgeous. I also listened to David Bowie, Scary Monsters and Super Creeps. Before Black Star came out, it was something a lot of people said was Bowie's last great album before Black Star. They're kind of right. I mean, 90s Bowie is not great.
you know who's been performing at Bowie tribute shows?
Who?
You might have heard him. Corey Glover.
Oh, who's that nerd?
But he sings too well.
He sings too well to do Bowie, so he had to do something else. No, I'm just kidding.
He has been
doing Bowie shows.
I love it when like people are singing the national anthem and they just go, "Oh, say, can you see?"
Oh, who is the one who just did a miserable job?
Fergie.
Fergie is the one I was thinking of.
Yeah. Anyways, probably the heaviest thing Bowie ever dropped. It's also very wild. And I think it's the opener where the hook is like, it's like this spoken word hook with just this Japanese girl just talking. It's so weird. But it's also really good. Like, and that's pretty much it. I mean, I did listen to like some stuff that came out this year so that I knew I'd put it on my list. My year end list that we're
Taylor
doing.
Taylor Swift.
No.
I have three. I don't know how many she dropped. I don't really care.
And
she's my top five.
I do not care at all. And I know this is going to get people angry.
Whoa.
But I just don't care about Taylor Swift. I just don't. Wow. I never liked a hit she got. Mostly because I don't remember the first time I heard them. I don't even like her country stuff.
That's the Kanye coming out right there.
That's not.
He holds her responsible for Kanye's fall from grace. Because she stood there and received an award.
I mean, Kanye was right, but like...
Kanye was right. That's the crazy
thing. I honestly haven't heard it either, though. You know, I can't comment on it because I haven't heard it.
I just don't care. Run the Jewels 4. Fetch the Bolt Cutters, Fiona Apple. And some other stuff that will eventually be on my year-end list. That's a little sneak peek. What did you listen to, Dad?
It wasn't much of a sneak peek if you didn't tell us. It's like a sneak... non-peak.
Well, he did tell you.
Okay. So, Dylan, my friend. I listened to the new Bob Dylan record a little bit. I listened to what we were studying this week.
Studying?
Yep. I decided I'm going to listen to Stevie Wonder's entire catalog.
Okay.
Over the next few months. And so I knocked out Music From My Mind, Inner Visions. I'm almost through Intervisions and into the next one. So I knocked out three albums this week of Stevie Wonder's as well.
Also, were you still going?
I'm
sorry. I'm sorry I interrupted you. I didn't.
It's fine.
But and this is not known, but if you want to start off with Arctic Monkeys catalog, start chronologically. Please, move up. It's like when people tell you to start on AM, it's like when people tell you to start Kanye with My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. No. Start with College Dropout. Move to Pablo. But
what I'm doing with Stevie Wonder.
Like you didn't already know Stevie Wonder. Jared, did you or at least remember?
Remember what?
The stuff you listened to?
I listened to some of Orville Peck's Pony. Just really, really enjoy that album, and it felt like the right vibe for this week.
Yeah. Good.
That and the new Kid Cudi album, I don't have like a strong opinion on it yet, but I like it. I think the production's really good, and I like a handful of the songs. It's just like an hour long, so it's like, I don't know. Any album that goes past like 40, 45 minutes always ends up feeling like a bit of a trudge to make an opinion about.
Which is good, because the one we're doing one on is 44.
I think 40, 45 minutes, perfect length for an album. Or less, dude. Drop another Kid See Ghosts. It's like 23 minutes long or something.
Dude, Kid See Ghosts is a phenomenal EP.
It's 23 perfect minutes. No fat.
It's a phenomenal EP, Kid See Ghosts. It's one of my favorite albums ever.
It's delicious.
Delicious, by God. It's good for the palate.
I have realized that you can use any noun.
Adjective?
adjective.
All right, quick business to attend to. First of all, I'd like to thank guy who's partnered up with us and given us a place on his website, The Gin Project, Charles Gibson, for putting a couple of our prints by producer artist Haley up on his website. You can go there and check it out in their store. Order one if you would like. Also, a fan, I guess you would call him, a person who listens, goes by the moniker of Big Bad Beeler, sent us studying material for this podcast via the mail. And I cannot tell you how much that meant to us to kind of have somebody out there say, hey, man, keep banging away at what you're doing. It's fun. And he sent us three music books that we can use as reference points here and there, one of which is like it pulls together and tells you the future, you know, how a band, what their influences was and what they influenced going forward, which is really neat. And anyway, so I just wanted to thank them real quick for Jared, for my man Ray, for myself KP. This has been a Go Home Heat production. Thank you for listening. Copyright 2020.